Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Today we're taking a closer look at the campaign of Democrat gubernatorial candidate Ed Fitzgerald. He's had tepid support from Democrats across the state at the outset. His first choice for a running mate sputtered after reports that he owed more than $800,000 in federal payroll taxes and state unemployment taxes. Fitzgerald also has struggled to raise enough money to pay for a viable media campaign, and he recently was slammed with revelations of a police report from a certain summer night 2 years ago. After that came news that Fitzgerald didn't have a regular driver's license for a decade. Now his campaign staff is falling apart. What does this mean for Fitzgerald, and more importantly for his supporters, and maybe more importantly than that, for voters in general? Joining me in the studio is political scientist and director of the Ray C. Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron, John Green. Welcome back to the show.
It's great to be with you.
And also joining us is Columbus Dispatch public affairs reporter Joe Varden. Joe just broke the stories on the campaign staff falling apart. Welcome to the show.
It's good to be back.
So what came first in general, the chicken or the egg? In other words, is the Fitzgerald campaign appearing to fall apart now because of the headlines and questions over the summer? Or are there headlines and questions over the summer because his campaign wasn't necessarily well put together, well vetted in the first place? Joe Varden?
Yeah, I mean, the campaign is and always was fundamentally flawed, but not for what you just described. Since the beginning, Ed has been, by all accounts, a poor fundraiser, and actually went into this with a certain assumption that because he was the Democratic nominee in the seventh largest state in the country, most important swing state, that the money would be there, that it would just show up. And he kind of went about his business with that idea in mind. I mean, the campaign was set up properly. They brought in the right people, or, you know, at least in terms of what positions they wanted to have filled. Mm-hmm. They had a plan in place, you know, to oppose Kasich at every turn. They've always had a problem with message, but those are things that can be ironed out over time. But it's always been a problem about money. And then you fast forward to the things that have been happening over the past couple weeks, and those things have virtually ended any chance that Ed ever had of raising enough money to run the kind of campaign he thought he could run.
John Green?
You know, I tend to agree with that assessment, although we have to remember that running a statewide campaign, particularly for governor in Ohio, is a very difficult thing to do. And even though the Fitzgerald campaign brought in some very good people, and I think they had a pretty good plan, there was always going to be a shakedown period of that cruise. And, you know, I think some of the response to the various problems that you outlined at the top represented an example of that lack of experience. Now, campaigns get better typically as the campaign goes on, because they learn how to handle these things and how to work in this very complicated state with multiple media markets and so forth. But, you know, the revelations of the last few weeks are not the sort of thing a campaign wants to experience at all. And then there has to be some kind of response crafted to that. And I think some of the shakeup we're seeing in the Fitzgerald campaign reflects the fact that the campaign itself, but also the Democratic Party, is not very happy with the response to those issues.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the campaign of Democratic gubernatorial candidate Ed Fitzgerald. My guests, John Green, political scientist, director of the Ray C. Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron, and also Columbus Dispatch public affairs reporter Joe Varden, who's been covering the race. Joe, what about the Ohio Democratic Party and their role in all of this? Is there a sense that someone, you said he came in with an improper assumption that the money would come. Where did he get that from? How did that happen?
Well, I mean,
did someone slap him at some point and say, "Wake up"?
There has been no shortage of encouragement, I'll say, within Democratic circles for Ed to do more with fundraising. And there was a time when he was getting a little better at it, when you began to hear of him being more committed to making phone calls to donors rather than holding the next press conference or what have you. But and I know, I mean, people want to tie this to the Ohio Democratic Party itself and lay some blame there, that Ed could somehow wind up being the nominee. But I think that that is flawed, too, because the process where we got from the 2010 election and what happened there to who was going to run this time was quite lengthy, and there were many moving parts. And the Democratic Party, I would say, helped Ed get the nomination at some point, but it really wasn't until Ed was basically the most obvious choice left. He had always wanted to run for this, and in the meantime, some of the other viable choices like Ted Strickland.
Former Ohio Governor Ted Strickland, you know, who was beaten to 2010 by John Kasich.
By 2 points.
Two percentage points. Right.
In a dead red year. I mean, looking back now 4 years, you know, then Governor Strickland ran a great campaign. He almost won in an unwinnable year. But as I said, the field kind of narrowed itself, and it left us with Fitzgerald, who, and we'll let John get going here, but who had an excellent resume for someone to run. I mean, we're talking about a former FBI agent. We're talking about other background in law enforcement. And then we're talking about an elected official from the largest swath of Democrats that we have in Cleveland, Ohio.
But a swath of Democrats that had gone through their own troubles in recent years, and also a swath that had elected a Republican mayor for many years. So, you know, it could kind of go back and forth when it comes to Cleveland Democrats. John Green?
Oh, I would agree. I mean, I think that Ed Fitzgerald did have a good resume, but it wasn't a flawless resume. And, you know, there are fissures in the Democratic Party, just like there are in the Republican Party. And we didn't see those explode like they sometimes do in primaries and in struggles for nominations. But they were beneath the surface. And there have always been an element of the Democratic Party that was not 100% happy with Fitzgerald. Now, they're probably less happy now, and there's more general discontent. But, you know, party organizations really do two things today. One is they try to organize coalitions, and the other thing is they mobilize voters. And the Democratic Party in Ohio today is very well organized. It's well funded. You know, it will do a lot in the fall to get out particularly base Democratic voters. The question is, will they have strong enough candidates to go along with those efforts? So, you know, there's what the candidate does, and there's what the party does.
And they better be well-funded and good at getting out the vote, because Democratic voters traditionally are hard to get out if there isn't that motivation.
That's true. Many Democratic voters come from people of lower status, lower education levels, younger people, minorities, people who don't tend to vote as often anyway. But in a gubernatorial election, without the lure of a presidential ticket, they're harder to mobilize. And when they are mobilized, it's because there's a strong gubernatorial candidate. So, you know, a lot of things are coming together in a kind of negative way right now.
Right off the bat, aren't they behind the eight ball when they're left with a standing candidate?
You know, I think in many, many respects they are. And, you know, getting back to the issue of funds, because we can talk about organization and we can talk about a message and so forth, but in a big state like Ohio, you really need money. And in some ways, Ed Fitzgerald's biggest competitors were other Democrats in other states, where we have a slew of senatorial and gubernatorial races that are very close. So a lot of the folks that might, under other circumstances, have wanted to be active in Ohio funding the Fitzgerald campaign are sending their money elsewhere, because there's this, you know, the Senate is at stake and, you know, a lot of other competitive races.
That's a great point. I mean, that is certainly part of it. And that was part of the calculus, I think, that Ed left out, which is just, Ohio is a super important state politically. But there are these other races where the money could go. So you have to show yourself to be a viable candidate. You have to be able to raise the money in state. You have to get off to a good start. The polling has to be close. You have to be gaining ground. You have to make sharp policy choices and sharp picks with running mates and things like that. And a lot of those things didn't happen for Ed at a time when he also wasn't raising a whole lot of money. And it just, as we went over time, it became more and more obvious to some of these outside donors, some of that outside money outside the state, that there might be other places they could go or should go.
Right. John Green, you said that the money was going to people outside of the state. This isn't even down ticket candidates in Ohio. This is all outside now.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, gubernatorial races and senatorial races often draw national money. But, of course, there's impact on down ticket races, generally through mobilizing voters. Things that the parties do, but also that the candidates can mm-hmm. do by the kind of message they have. And, you know, one of the fears that many Democrats have now, and it's a reasonable one, is that if the top of the ticket doesn't perform very well, there could be serious implications for the other constitutional offices, for the state legislature, for congressional races. And, you know, that's something that, if you're a party leader, that worries you, right? Because as nice as it is to win the governorship, you want to win some other races, too.
How much of this is an effect of, is an outcome of the fact that Republicans have dominated for so long now? How do you break through? There was a day when it was Democrats, but that was 25 years ago. Mm. It's really been so dominated by Republicans for so many years now, Joe Varden. I mean, how do you break through that in a state like Ohio even?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, that's one of the other things that was sewn into this race before Ed ever had any of these problems come to the surface, which is that no Republican governor has lost re-election in Ohio since we started having four-year terms. So that goes back to 1958. John might be able to tell you even before 1958 what the record was, but I'm certain it wasn't very good for the challenger. It's just very, very hard to do. And at the same time, Ohio, as we know, and we've said a couple times already today, is a swing state in presidential years and has gone blue. Certainly for Barack Obama twice, and then you know you look at Clinton and some of the other areas. It's a state that can be blue if the right voters turn out in these off-year, mid-year elections, and that was going to be the challenge.
Well, there are really three things that parties need to make the comeback. You know, because every party is out of office for a while, and mm-hmm. we do have, even though we're a swing state, we do have real legitimate swings, you know, in a Democratic or Republican direction. But there are three ways back. Probably the most important is to develop candidates that are known statewide. And we have this little rule in Ohio that doesn't occur all the time, but it occurs more often than not, that candidates oftentimes have to run statewide and lose once so that they can have name recognition and understand the state. The second thing you have to do is you have to develop a good party organization to do the kind of services and the get-out-the-vote efforts that are necessary in modern campaigns. And then finally, you have to develop a good set of issues where you can distinguish yourself from the other party. It's not sufficient just to say we're better. You've got to actually show people why. And, you know, I think the Democrats have struggled particularly with the candidates, developing candidates. And a good example, someone who was rumored might run for governor this year on the Democratic side was Richard Cordray, a guy who'd been elected statewide, run a couple of times,
twice.
Kind of mm-hmm. blue chip candidate. And he decided to take a job in Washington, you know, which, you know, was probably good for his career. But there was one candidate that the party had developed that didn't turn out to be available. And so it's a struggle to get a good farm team, if you will, of candidates to run statewide.
Well, that's an interesting point. Because I was saying earlier that this isn't really the Democratic Party's fault. You know, the field kind of cleared itself and we were left with Ed on that side. And all that is true except for the Cordray angle. Because Rich did, through loyalists, he did try to make a run at taking control of the Democratic Party. Had he been successful there, you could have seen a very realistic scenario where he left his post within the Obama administration and come back to run. But that effort failed so miserably, so you could say that Chris Redfern and the people loyal to him, you know, made it so Cordray wouldn't be able to run for governor. But that effort to unseat Chris failed so miserably that he was really left with no option to run here.
We're talking about the state of gubernatorial candidate Ed Fitzgerald's campaign for governor against challenging Republican incumbent John Kasich on November. If you have a question or comment, What do you think? If you're a Democratic voter, what do you make of your choices this year? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We've been talking about the viability of Democrat Ed Fitzgerald's gubernatorial campaign. His name has been in the news for all the wrong reasons. Now his campaign staff appears to be abandoning ship. Still with us in the studio is political scientist John Green and Columbus Dispatch public affairs reporter Joe Varden. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I will not take questions that you leave with my screener, so either go on the air or email us, 614-292-8513. We have an email from Sarah. When the Democrats were vetting him as a candidate, how did they not realize he didn't have a driver's license? They were looking at him as a candidate at least a year ago. Someone should have made sure he got a driver's license then, so at least he would be slightly less. It would be slightly less of an issue. This is the most frustrating election ever, which raises a question, a larger question. I'm not sure I would have asked for Ed Fitzgerald's driver's license as the vetting process, but what is a vetting process like nowadays, John Green?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. You have two kinds of vetting. You have political vetting, and then you have what you might call personal vetting. And typically for major nominations, it's political vetting. You know, people look at the issue positions, the background, you know, the experience of the candidate. But it is somewhat rare to dig into the details of people's lives, such as driver's licenses. That's just, you know, one of those things that, you know, Joe can address this better than I, but it doesn't seem to me that's the sort of thing that most journalists look at, and most party leaders don't either, because they would just assume that there wouldn't be that kind of problem. And, you know, it's one of those really interesting issues, because if you think of all the bad things politicians can do, this is kind of minor. You know, it's
Ultimately, it wasn't the proverbial caught in bed with scenario.
Right.
It was a driver's license. But
wow.
It still niggles at me daily. Why? In fact, mine expires in October, and by golly, I'm already worried about it. Joe Varden?
Yeah, I mean, and that's that is certainly not the first time that I've heard that line, which is, it's just a driver's license. You know, he didn't kill anyone. He didn't. And that's true. It is. It's a misdemeanor for a first-time offense. Over 10 years with no driver's license and three separate times applying for a temporary license, at times when he was the mayor of a large suburb in Cleveland, mm-hmm. and then the office holder of the largest governmental entity in the, you know,
county.
In the Cleveland area. Mm-hmm. And so that raises some larger questions, simply as to why you would do that. And I mean, you know, the lengths that you would have to go to mismanage a very seemingly simple task that all of us here can manage. But the question that you asked at the top about the vetting, I'm going to, in my typical fashion, I'm going to offer a very long answer to this.
Okay.
And start there. I mean, was he vetted when he was elected mayor of Lakewood? Was he vetted when he was elected the first county executive in Cuyahoga County on the heels of a large corruption scandal? And was he vetted to be the Democratic nominee for governor? And the answer to that question is yes. There was $20,000 paid to dig into him. But you can pay all the money in the world, and when it comes to your driving record, you are going to get sheets of paper from the Bureau of Motor Vehicles, and you look over them, and in very small print at the bottom of one of the pages, it's going to say, "Do you have a driver's card that is invalid or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And when? When's the card from? And in even smaller print on that sheet, Ed says, yes, 2002. When I first broke the story that he had problems with his licenses, I admit I missed that number because it's that small. So, you know, a vetter that you're paying lots of money to could miss this easily. You wouldn't. There isn't a record that says this man does not have a license. You have to go through these documents and know what you're looking for.
It's kind of like knowing how to vote on an issue on the ballot. What does yes mean? What does no mean?
Right. But, you know, it's interesting because political consultants have often told me that when they sign up to work for candidates, one of the questions they ask is there anything in your background mm-hmm. that I should know about? And, you know, something serious, but maybe not something that serious, but that could be part of the problem. And many consultants have said to me that candidates are not always that forthcoming. Partly because they're embarrassed, but sometimes they don't think of an issue like this as
like
being problematic.
What newspapers do you read on a daily basis?
Things like that, right?
Or is your husband involved in an anti-state issue? It depends on the candidate. For sure, he's a former FBI agent.
Right, right. And so I think that people know that. And I do think that has bought him quite a bit of room in his career. I don't think there's any other way to say it. I mean, when you are a former FBI agent, I think you're given the benefit of the doubt on some certain things like driver's licenses. I mean, you would just someone who's an FBI agent and is a mayor and is a county executive and is a former prosecutor, you would never even think that this would be an issue, that he would go 10 years without having one. You would never imagine that. And it's because of, I think, of who he is and was.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with political scientist John Green and also Columbus Dispatch public affairs reporter Joe Varden about the campaign of Ed Fitzgerald. He is the Democratic challenger to Republican incumbent John Kasich. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from a listener who says, don't you need to show a driver's license to vote in Ohio? Did Fitzgerald not vote in the past decade? Did you check on that,
Joe? Oh, he's a voter.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you don't have to show a driver's license, but you do have to show identification.
Okay.
And there are other kinds of identification.
Sure.
That people can use, passports, utility bills, I mean, anything just to establish mm-hmm. Your credentials. So you don't actually need a driver's license. But, you know, that whole issue of having to identify yourself at the polls is a very controversial one because there are voters who find it difficult because of their social status. So, you know, that is a controversy in its own right.
But certainly not a difficulty for him.
Right.
Democratic Attorney General candidate David Pepper has paid nearly $10,000 in parking fines over the past 14 years after being ticketed more than 180 times. That it wasn't just parking fines, but mostly parking fines, apparently. That made headlines today and raises the issue of what matters to voters. Mm. He did pay all of his fines. He is licensed. He's not a scofflaw per se because he pays his fine, but he certainly likes to. He has a problem with getting tickets. Mm. It would probably break my bank, but apparently not his. But it made big headlines. Did it make bigger headlines because of what's happened with Fitzgerald, Joe Varden?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know.
Would we even be looking at stuff like that at this point?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an issue. Sure. I mean, because it raises this question, which you mentioned, that would hurt you. If you had to pay $10,000 in parking fines, it would hurt me. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't hurt John, but it would, you know, it would hurt the average folk. And so, at minimum, at a time when class warfare is absolutely a political strategy, and not that Mike DeWine could wade into that, he's quite well off on his own. But it
says who is the incumbent attorney general?
But it says to the voter that David Pepper has enough money that it doesn't matter to him when and where he parks.
But it matters to him now.
I guess it does.
Well, you know, there's, I think probably there's been more attention to this because there's a couple of candidates that have these types of problems. From a purely political point of view, the reason these are so damaging is they suggest a lack of attention to detail, to details that all the rest of us have to deal with, right? Driver's licenses, parking tickets, traffic fines. And, you know, I think that's something that is very easy for voters to understand. They may not come down on, it may come down on one side or the other, but it's easy for them to understand. I mean, think a lot of very important issues are hard to understand. Take the debate in Ohio about what creates jobs. There's good arguments on both sides. It's difficult to sort through that and decide which side you agree with. But these types of issues, driver's licenses, parking fines, everybody over the age of 16 understands this. So it's an easy thing to understand, and it's a difficult thing to explain for a candidate.
That's right.
Apparently difficult. At least I would like to see some angst in him. Like, yes, it's tortured me every year when I get the reminder from the... But nothing.
You know, another thing to consider is that the license issue with David Pepper is not new, and it in fact had been reported by news outlets in the past, and it sort of is resurrected at a time when DeWine has been facing some really tough headlines. I have no evidence to suggest that it's affecting the race.
About allegedly maybe getting involved in a sexual harassment investigation in his office.
Yeah.
And also who he's hired to is attorney, what law firms have been hired to do contract work for the Attorney General's office.
That's right. And so a story that is not new resurfaces. And so in that respect, it's a lot different than what is going on with Ed. It's a different set of circumstances, but I think, as you guys said, I think there's probably is some connection there.
Sandy in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. I just wanted to say that the driver's license issue might seem small, but it really isn't, because it speaks to Mr. Fitzgerald's character. It appears he's arrogant and that he feels he's above the law. And I feel that our public officials should follow the laws of the land and be held above reproach.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Sandy.
Thank you.
Kim in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Hi, Kim.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
I just had a quick comment about the vetting process. First of all, I disagree with the lady who just called. I don't think there are any moral implications for not renewing your driver's license. I think it's just laziness, actually. But when he was vetted, one of the gentlemen made the point that the vetting itself cost $20,000. I assume this was for the gubernatorial position, not his previous position.
Mm-hmm.
And if that is true, the argument that somebody in the vetting process missed something because it was small print is absolutely unacceptable. If someone is being paid $20,000, their job is to even read the tiny print at the bottom and comprehend what it means and report it. All of that, of course, does not excuse Fitzgerald himself for not having said, oh, by the way, I skipped that whole renewal process for 10 years. But I don't think that whatever company vetted him, that's their job. And if they didn't catch it, then they're completely responsible and should never be used.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Kim. It's like, yay, Joe Varden, for spotting that. No one paid you $20,000 to find it.
Exactly.
I kind of agree with that. John Green, I mean, isn't that what these vetting people do? By the way, Kim, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, we see these vetting problems more often with appointed positions than with elected positions. But, the vetters are not perfect either, and they often miss things. And, more unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your point of view, the ultimate vetting is the campaign. And that isn't always done, in the most constructive way, but that's where a lot of information eventually comes out.
I mean, the inspector who inspected our house before we bought it missed all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
and we're, right. We see new stuff all the time, and he was paid rather well for that.
Email from Hal in Worthington. He writes, the problem with the driver's license issue is Mr. Fitzgerald's own admission that he is a procrastinator, and who wants a procrastinator in the governor's office? And to Kim's point, well, that just means he's lazy. Well, in some people's books, you know, I'll say laziness is not a quality you'd want for a governor, mm-hmm. I suppose. So Hal, thanks for that message. Email from Chrysanthi. I'm still going to vote for Ed because the GOP has torn this state apart. As a woman living in Ohio, I can't bring myself to support a party that is fighting to reduce women's access to choice. I don't care if a person doesn't have a driver's license, and I don't care if you're found in a car at 4 a.m. with another woman. Your personal life is personal. I vote on how you take care of the citizens of your state. Okay, so this brings up that larger question then of, can the Democrats inspire people like Chrysanthi to get out there and vote then, right, John Green?
Oh, yes, I think so. And, you know, the short-term problem that the Fitzgerald campaign has is that they've been talking about driver's licenses, as we have been for the last few minutes, and not talking about the choice issue, about the environment, about jobs, about the local government fund, you know, the whole series of issues that a lot of Ohioans care about. And, you know, if the campaign is going to get back on track, they've got to find a way to talk about those issues, partly to mobilize the Democratic base, but also to appeal to independent voters who may not be completely sold on the Kasich administration. So, you know, this is what campaigns are really about. And I think the Democrats have some real issues to work with. They've just got to get those issues working, if you will.
Yeah, Joe Varden, I mean, where do you guys come in, the folks covering this? Mm-hmm. Last weekend, there was an article in the Dispatch, and it was fun to read, I admit. I like reading those articles about, you know, what's your favorite toothpaste or something like that,
right,
with the candidates. But is that because of a dearth of issues that really have come to the fore in this campaign?
No. I mean, that story where they ask the candidates goofy and sometimes uncomfortable questions is something that they've been doing at the Dispatch every cycle for, you know, a couple decades. And I think the case in point, you know, things have been really bad for Fitzgerald, and that's what most of the stories have been about in this race lately. But yesterday, you know, Governor Kasich took questions twice, and he was asked after the second one, well, what is your second term agenda going to be? And that's what led my story this morning. I think that my boss, Ben Marison, in his weekly column sort of introducing the goofy question story, he said it. He said, yeah, the race doesn't look so good, but we're going to keep covering it because it's up to the voters and because there are still issues to be discussed. Now, that's different than, you know, asking me what I think, if I think they can break through. Mm-hmm. But from a journalistic standpoint, yeah, I mean, you have to keep covering. You have to keep asking the questions. They deserve to be asked.
We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We've been talking about the viability of Democrat Ed Fitzgerald's gubernatorial campaign. His name has been in the news for all the wrong reasons. Now his campaign staff is stepping down one by one. Still with us in the studio is political scientist John Green, Columbus Dispatch public affairs reporter Joe Varden. Joining us now is Dale Butlin. He's a veteran of Ohio Democratic politics and now communications director for the liberal think tank Innovation Ohio. Dale Butlin, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann.
Before we move on, a caller from the Board of Elections called to make a correction. He said you cannot use your passport to vote.
Oh,
which
I did not know that.
It would seem like a logical up.
I think we should dock at least 5 words off of John Green's title at the University of Akron for getting that wrong.
That's right.
At least.
Right. I stand corrected.
I'm just going to say it real slow. So give me plenty of time at the end of the program to talk about that. Dale Butlin, with nearly 3 months to go before Election Day, is it still too early to call it?
Well, look, I mean, there's no question that Ed's campaign has had more than its share of problems, but I think it's a bit premature to say that Republicans are destined for a blowout up and down the ticket. Because let's remember, those on the Republican ticket are themselves deeply flawed. And while the Democrats have some down-ballot candidates who are not only really attractive, but who are now actually raising more money than are their Republican opponents. So Kasich, sure, if you go to Vegas, he's got to be the odds-on favorite to win. But I wouldn't bet on a landslide, and I think he'll have the shortest coattail since probably Pee Wee Herman.
You know a lot more than the typical voter does, though, about the candidates. They are, it is a pretty good rack of candidates, no question about them. But do the voters know enough about them? And is just less than 3 months enough time to tell them about them?
Yeah, well, let's start with John Kasich himself. And whatever problems Ed has had, voters in this state have not warmed up to John Kasich personally ever, which is why he's still barely cracking, 50% of the vote, despite millions of dollars of television ads that both he and the RGA have run on his behalf. To a lot of people, Kasich is still a my way or the highway bully, and a lot of people still remember how he tried to take away worker rights during issue 2, Senate Bill 5. And even more importantly, he's trying to sell a flawed product, namely his record as governor. I mean, leave aside the tax cuts that favor the wealthy. Leave aside the $500 million worth of cuts to public schools and the fact that charter schools have gotten a bazillion extra dollars, despite the fact that they have lousy records. Let's just look at jobs, which is John Kasich's calling card for his re-election campaign. Last month, Ohio led the nation in the number of lost jobs. We rank 41st in the country in new job creation, and we've lagged the national average for the last 20 months. And on top of all that, today, Ohioans are going to learn that the few jobs that John Kasich has managed to create don't pay a living wage. Innovation Ohio, which is the organization for which I work, will be releasing a study by noon today, which shows that for the first time since 2007, low-wage jobs let me back that up. Ohio now has more low-wage jobs than we have medium or high-wage jobs, and virtually all the jobs that John Kasich has managed to create since he came to office are low-wage jobs paying between $7 and, $13.39 an
hour. You know, Dale, you do a great job of reciting these issues and getting to the meat of the matter, but you don't even work for the campaign. So getting back to the campaign and what its responsibility is, what's your opinion of the Ohio Democratic Party in all of this? Bad planning? Are they not supporting him properly? Why aren't they talking about these issues like you are?
Oh, I think they are talking about those issues. I mean, I think most of the talk recently has been about the problems that, you know, Ed has had with regard to the driver's license and all the rest. And there I would simply say, you know, it is a big leap to run, and I think lots of people in the country have seen this over time. It's a big leap to run for, in this case, county executive mm-hmm. to governor.
Right.
Rick Perry down in the state of Texas is a great example. Here's a guy, runs a big state, one of the most powerful people in the country,
longest
probably.
Longest-serving governor in Texas.
And yet when he tried to make the leap to the presidential stage, he had a lot of problems. Oops, remember that? So I mean, it is a tough leap, and I don't think that maybe Ed was sufficiently prepared for it.
You know, I would agree with that. I think that, you know, you have to learn how to run for office, and it's one thing to run locally. It's another thing to run statewide. So I think there's a lot of truth to that. But, you know, the kinds of issue positions that Dale was just reciting is exactly the sort of thing that the Democrats and the Fitzgerald campaign and the other people who are running statewide on the Democratic ticket want to be talking about, because there's the opportunity they have to draw a distinction between themselves and the Republicans who basically control state government.
Well, as long as we're talking about those other down ballot races, let's talk about that for a minute. Josh Mandel.
I knew you were going to pick him first.
I mean, look, after the sleazy campaign he ran for the U.S. Senate.
Against Sherrod Brown, yeah.
Against Sherrod Brown. Polls have consistently shown that voters don't much like or trust him. Mike DeWine, the attorney general, is caught up in a pay-to-play pay-to-play scandal and wants to deny contraceptive coverage to women. Dave Yost is having a hard time raising money because GOP rank and file don't really like him much. By contrast, we have some down-ballot candidates like Connie Pillich, David Pepper, John Carney, now raising more money than their Republican opponents. And that's why I say for all these reasons, I think a Republican blowout this fall is anything but guaranteed. And at least some of these down-ballot candidates for the Democrats could still actually win.
Joe Varden?
Yes.
You agree?
I agree with some of what Dale said. He said a lot there. I agree with his...
As far as them raising enough money to make their case and
get it
out there to the voters.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think Connie Pillich is going to be there. I think she's done quite...
Well, she's the one that's challenging Josh Mandel.
Right. I'm not saying she's going to win, but she's going to have money, more so than a Democrat running for treasurer would. So that's going to be competitive. And the John Carney-Dave Yost race, it's going to be competitive. So I think Dale is absolutely right that there is an opportunity here for the Democratic Party to salvage some things. The issues where I have problems with, you know, anybody who spends any time listening to me bloviate knows that job numbers irk me because we always on both sides we take them out of context or we use them in the context that helps us. All the numbers that Dale listed off, I don't think there's anything wrong with any one of them. I'm not suggesting that his numbers are incorrect or that he's portraying them in a way that he shouldn't, but there's more of a story there. For instance, I mean, I think I'll start with the 41st number. We're 41st in job creation. Well, that is if you are referring to job creation as a percentage of your workforce, which is a much longer thing to say. And Ohio, being a very big state, would have to create a ton of jobs every month to rank highly in that. And are we? No. But since they have been keeping that stat in like 1992, Ohio has never been higher than, I think, 11th in any month or year. And that was... the 11th was one of the years under Kasich, and the second highest was one of the years under Ted. We always stink in that number.
Well, with all due respect to my...
11th isn't stinking as bad as 42, well, but...
Exactly. Well, but our average is like 30.
But the bottom line is this an issue? So this isn't a show about job numbers right now. This is a show about the issues that will...
Right, and I'll get to that. The reason why... we kind of dove into the nitty-gritty there, but people feel good about where they are. And the polling suggests that 60% say we are on the right track. Now, and I think that is one of the reasons why Ed on the stump hasn't been really talking about jobs numbers, because that's not really there as an issue for him. I mean, we can talk about these, you know, the wonky numbers here and there and argue about them, but people are feeling better about themselves living in Ohio than they were. So that's why jobs aren't as much of an issue this time as they have been.
With all due respect to my friend Joe, I would suggest to you that one of the reasons that if polls show that people are feeling better, and by the way, I can show you some polls where people say they're not feeling so much better and for some very good reasons. But if they are feeling better, one of the reasons is they get a steady drumbeat of this from John Kasich and, with due respect, many, many reporters. The truth is, America as a whole, right now, Joe, and you can't argue with this, America has recovered every job that we lost during the Great Recession, and we've added some. Ohio is still 140,000 jobs short of where we were before the Great Recession, and I might add, the jobs that have been created are low-wage jobs that you can't raise a family on. They don't pay a living wage. That can't make people be feeling very good.
We have an email from Greg, who asks, what about debates? Are Fitzgerald and Kasich going to debate this fall? And would a debate matter? What do we know about that, Joe Varden?
Well, that's an interesting question, because one of the people doing the debate negotiations for Ed may leave the campaign. That's Dennis Watnoski, and And so I don't have a concrete answer for you there. I suspect there will be a debate. I think that would not be a good look for the governor to not debate Ed. But I don't know what that's going to look like at this point. I really don't.
There again, it would seem to me that the news media has a certain responsibility here, whether it's answering questions from the press or debating. Those are things that you do in this country when you run for public office. And Kasich lately has been refusing to take questions, as you know. Now there's some question about whether he's going to debate. I used to work for a guy named John Glenn, who won four terms in this state as a U.S. senator, the only man in history to do that. Every time he ran for election, he always debated twice. John Kasich to even suggest that he might not a debate once is the height of arrogance, and shame on you and shame on all of us if we let him get away with
it. So, Dale Butlin, I mean, let's just talk about what's left of the campaign staff and how much Ed Fitzgerald can achieve with what he's got left with it. Dale Butlin, I mean, what are your recommendations? You've run lots of campaigns. You know, you've been there in the midst of this before. Have you ever been in something like this where it's fallen apart at this point? And
I think honestly, what is going to happen is the party is going to put Ed on a bus. They're going to send him around the state. I understand night before last, he spoke to a sold-out dinner in Mount Vernon. He has another sold-out dinner last night, I understand, up in northwest Ohio somewhere. So they're going to do that. But I think most of the focus is now going to be maybe on the down-ballot candidates, because we do have some there who have not had the same problems we've had at the top of the ticket and who could very, very well win. But I think Ed is not going to be a quitter. I think he's going to, I mean, things are not looking good for him now, let's be honest, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you otherwise. But I don't think he's going to quit. I think he's going to give it all he's got, and I think we're going to have a campaign.
Joe Varden?
Yeah, that's
when you have to pick up the phone and call someone at the Fitzgerald campaign. Who do you call?
Right. I mean, that, you know, on Monday, as I was working towards breaking the story of about his campaign departures, I had no choice but to call him. And I got to his voicemail because the people whose job it has been to answer the phone and speak on his behalf either are leaving or may. And so that's just not a good situation to be in. I don't know that will be Ed's assessment the next time he speaks on the record about this, but Dale's assessment is right. And more party, elders, if you will, are going to start, I think, saying that publicly, that the top of the ticket, it's not like they're giving up, but it's time to refocus and reshape things. So maybe they can do better down ticket, and you know, if in the process Ed can pick up a few more votes, okay. But the focus is going to be elsewhere.
Look, I think it's really important for this state, regardless of what happens at the ballot box on Election Day, it is important that we have a debate in this state over what kind of state we want to be and what kind of policies we want to pursue. Do we, for example, want to get rid of the income tax in this state,
which is something that Governor Kasich has promised to do?
Correct, and just this morning, he said he wants to have yet another income tax cut. Presumably, this one, like his previous three, will overwhelmingly benefit the wealthiest people. Is that what we want to do? Do we want to raise sales taxes and other regressive taxes that put the tax burden mostly on the middle income and poor? That's a legitimate debate to have, regardless of what happens on Election Day.
John Green, what does happen to the machinery of politics and debate and policy in the state in a state like Ohio, this huge state, when we don't have a competitive race at the top, what next?
It doesn't work very well. And the kinds of issues that we've been talking about here today simply aren't raised. Voters are less interested in participating in the process. They feel that they don't have choices, and they might very much not have a choice. But I think the shakeup in the Fitzgerald campaign is an opportunity to reset the campaign. And the goal, I think, is to be competitive. And I think the Fitzgerald campaign can be competitive and the Democratic ticket can be. It may take a little bit of luck for the Democrats to win the governor's race this time. But the goal right now is not necessarily to win, but to get in a position to win. So, you know, when people ask me, you know, is the campaign over? My reaction is no, it's not, because we don't know what's going to happen in the next few weeks until Election Day. And if campaigns are competitive, then they can take advantage of good things that happen to them.
Yeah, and let me just make one final point. Connie Pelich, I think, is a case in point. She represents in the Ohio House a fairly Republican district. In 2010, she won election, even though that was a Republican sweep that year. In 2012, Romney carried her district, and she still won re-election. So it's not over till it's over, as they say.
Not over till it's over. That's Dale Butlin, veteran of Ohio Democratic politics and communications director for Innovation Ohio. John Green, political scientist, director at the Racy Bliss Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. Thanks for joining us. And also Joe Varden, Columbus Dispatch public affairs reporter. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Always good to be here.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.